So this is really a continuation to the previous talk. The title is there. The previous talk discussed expanding systems in gauge theory, and I will try to do the same in a somewhat different way. But I cannot resist saying a few words about these celebrated numbers. In some, this kind of illustrates some of the status of our field. We have seen this picture very many times. It's the free energy of QCD, quantum chromodynamics. And I just want to remind you of the fact that here are these lattice points. And so when we calculate this number 1 here, which is 8e to the 4th, that one can do by hand. It's a very simple calculation. But to get these numbers here, you must have a teraflop computer, run it about 1 year. So you need something like 10 to 18, 10 to 19 floating point operations. So this is absolutely something you can only do numerically. And there's no way one can calculate this without doing this numerics. There's no truncation, no effective theory of QCD phase transition. It's really good.
So this
And yeah, of course, that is roughly the level. Actually, the experiments are billion hours, 10 to 9. Computers are 10 to 10. So now, if you, so this theoretical, if you look at this curve here, this is the theoretical curve here, which contains this g to 6 terms. So to calculate this term here, this log g to 6, you have to evaluate 25 million four loop Feynman diagrams in 3 dimensions, 25 million. And so that clearly is something you can only do with symbolic computation. So that, again, that's computing. And you can never do this by hand. And to get this remaining missing number, this Linde constant, that is where the forefront is. So what one then has to do is to evaluate this same 25 million Feynman vacuum four loop diagrams, but now in full 4 dimensions with sum and integrals. So that's which remains to be done.
And you've done one of them, is that right?
Precisely. There are two of them. That's a scalar sector which has been done. So the gauge sector waits to be done. The difficulty is when you have finite temperature, you have sum integrals, the usual techniques of vacuum Feynman diagrams just don't work.
Can you count the number of diagrams by hand?
Well, that's a trivial calculation. You just draw this diagram.
Then we get the Linde constant, which is not done
by constant. Oh, yeah, actually, this is one important point. This Linde constant, there's a numerical part which has already been done. And some of this conceptually actually is very important.
So the non-perturbative part is easier than the perturbative
exactly.
part of the constant.
Since you can reduce that to a numerical computation. And actually this very important point here, so the expansion in coupling constant is completely well defined. But the problem is that one of the coefficients gets contributions from infinite number of loops. And that's why one has to do it numerically. So expansion in G is well defined. Likewise, this G6 is well defined and can be related precisely to the MS bar G, which is determined in vacuum field theory. So now, of course, in this meeting, the excitement is about this celebrated 3/4. And it just happens to be here. I don't know what had happened if it had been sitting somewhere up there or at point one. So maybe it is telling some physics, really, that we can sort of average over this region here, and this fits reasonably well. Yeah, but this coupling blows up here. It's also, that's all you know on this
effect.
Let's continue here. So now the point is that was static physics. This was not yet expanding systems. That was perfectly, completely static equilibrium physics, which can be done on the lattice. So they are derived in this theory from, we have seen actually this metric many times, and I repeat it here. It's a very simple metric. If you know the Schwarzschild metric in usual general relativity, I mean, there's this three-dimensional DE3 part, then there's a zero in temporal part and a pole, and this Z is now the extra dimension, the fifth dimension. And these together produce a black hole with a certain Hawking temperature. And this kind, this metric has the usual change of sign when you go through this Z0 horizon. So you, it has both the interior and the exterior. But now for what I'm doing, and for the previous talk, what is important, actually you can transform this metric to some other form. And here I could not resist taking some, this is from Polchinski, who has a great authority in string theory, who teaches us that we have found that some of the properties of this plasma are better modeled as a tiny black hole in a space with extra dimensions as the expected lump of elementary particles in ordinary space. So this is what this great authority of string theory tells us. And here is this tiny black hole. I just want to show, you have seen it, but I want to show. Here is this tiny black hole sitting here. And so this explains heavy ion collisions at peak.
I was pointing out that Polchinski hasn't been writing papers on this.
So, but for later purposes of this talk, and actually for the previous talk, one can transform this to another. By a simple transformation, it goes over to this metric here. It's this Fefferman metric where, actually, the main point with this ADS-Phi metric is this factor 1 over z squared. So whenever you take a Minkowski metric and pull out one coordinate and put it downstairs here, you get ADS metric. And this has a big effect, this metric. Actually, it's historically was first when one invented non-Euclidean geometry. That's how you can describe non-Euclidean geometry. And so you do a transformation and it goes to this form. That's what was related, that was already in the previous talk. But what's important here, actually, this is more limited. It does not have this change of sign. But it has it's of this Fefferman form. And now there's an important rule. It's a game now. So this is now, we are now in the five dimensions. And so we want physics in four dimensions. And in particular, we want the energy momentum tension. And so now the rule is that you go to this Fefferman metric, that was in the previous talk already. You write it in this form here, so you have this dz squared alone there. That's why you have to transform this away to this metric. And then if you want the energy momentum tensor, it has to be related to g mu nu, but it has a dimension 4. So clearly you expand this energy momentum tensor. This has the correct dimension. So very schematically, this is the way how to get the energy momentum tensor. I'm just telling you this here. Very, very, very schematically, there are corrections to this here. So now if I look at this metric, for example, and I look at these spatial terms, so I have plus here, this, and here I have minus and minus squared and something downstairs. Altogether, they give a factor 3. So now work out this d mu nu out of here. What I simply get is 3 and 1, 1, 1. I get this static energy momentum tensor. And so now there's an important part. I mean, this is a concept which has been discussed here earlier. There's the radius of the ADS space. And then there's the five-dimensional constant. And these are given. I will give a formula later on again. And so then this is a standard result we have got earlier. And then there's this famous factor 3/4 here, because if you do the same calculation in weak coupling limit, actually this part of the result we have seen here many times, but actually near the computing, then this even the following constants already 3 2 years ago, but he has not had time to publish them, and line computing this constant, I can very rapidly hear his Mieto's result, but it's still unpublished, but it's, it is there. He has not published it yet.
Is there any progress, or do you expect any progress in doing the computation you just mentioned in the presence of chemical potentials?
I don't think so. Just said, well, what we coupling calculation.
Just go back to your previous transparency. There might be a discrepancy in the definition of lambda between the strong coupling and weak coupling expansion. Is that the view?
It's well conceivable there's a discrepancy.
This is incorrect.
So, but now I come to the expanding matter. So it's very natural. Now we have this beautiful structure in equilibrium. Of course, we know that this matter is expanding in experiments. It's in local thermal equilibrium. It's perfectly good equilibrium, but it's local thermal equilibrium. How does it fit in this scheme? And Janik and Peshansky, they started, of course, their Shuriak chairman here has done also work here. So now, of course, the baseline is this Bjorken flow. And something, I mean, all of these details are perfectly well known here. I mean, if you put the standard value of the viscosity, you get a temperature which should go like this here. And then you can look at experimental curves, and you have all this structure almost. But now there's one very important point I want to emphasize, what I cannot address at all here. It's what is the magnitude here. So you have an absolute scale here. This I cannot discuss at all. It was not discussed in the previous one. But that is, of course, a very crucial one. So it's rather simple to get these power behaviors and this viscosity terms, relatively simple, but really the problem is to get these initial values of the temperature, the initial conditions. So this I will not discuss at all. So now what I want to do instead is to look at, this is one point here. So now the name of the game then is to take this alias equation and solve it. And try to find time-dependent solutions. And I have an argument with Mr. Chairman here about sources. There are no sources here. Of course, there may be, but I mean, it is enough to look at a sourceless equation. You get the black hole from a sourceless equation. The black hole radius and the mass and so on, they are just constants of integration of equations with certain symmetries. But because one has not succeeded to find solutions in this usual five-dimensional case, I will go to a simpler case, to 1+1 dimension. So genuinely, Bjorken expansion is expansion in one longitudinal dimension, but thermalization is three-dimensional. So now I look really at 1+1 dimensional for simplicity. So then, in fact, instead of S5 duality, one will have to go to a much more complicated duality. And this actually also illustrates why this is such a beautiful case, the case we have been discussing here. For example, that this alias radius is simply given by this lambda and alpha prime squared. It's a very simple relation. Well, if you start doing with, go to smaller number of dimensions, the compactification is much more complicated. It's so beautiful. You have five dimensions. Here, there are all kinds of, there's an S3 and a torus in four dimensions. And so when you relate these radii, you don't just get alpha prime squared, but you have the compactification volume of the four torus and so on and so on. It is a much more complicated theory. And also the boundary theory, it would be very nice if it were a two-dimensional gauge theory, but that's not a conformal one. It has a dimensional coupling constant. Instead, it is some mysterious conformal field theory in two dimensions. And from blogs I learned that Witten is working on it, so I'm sure that all string theorists will also soon be working on it. And in fact, he is reading that its group of automorphisms should be the monster group. I mean, that's fantastic if we get the monster group. Also. So anyway, so in this game, so what one does now, I want to look at solutions. Ideally, I would have a solutions for a metric with these symmetries. That's what Jani wrote in previously. So with three functions, so one longitudinal, two transverse, this Fefferman metric. Nobody has succeeded to work out any.
So why are you not allowing the rest of supergravity fields to be turned on, given that?
Oh, since I cannot handle them. Very simple.
But is it conceived?
I don't know. I would think it is. I would think it is. In many, many cases, it is consistent to take neglect all other form fields and dilaton and so on.
These are a couple of nonlinear equations.
Yes, but at least here you can take a dilaton, vanishes, and take form fields equal to zero. But honestly, I don't know.
You can answer that if you have a smooth solution. If the solution is smooth, then that's
fine. No, the first question is, what equation you write before you discuss solution? That goes first, right?
No, the first
direction is first.
So you make an answer, which feels
like
you want some answers. Yeah, but you have to check the...
Yeah.
The details of this theory are undoubtedly subtle, but a great deal can be understood, I think, if you just consider the normal field theory to be Q1, Q5 scalars and their associated superparker pairs. Just three scalars of pairs.
Yes, that's what I'm doing. Actually, this is one more important point. Somehow, this crucial, there's always a gravitational constant and this radius. And here it can be related to the number, basically, number of degrees of freedom, and likewise here also. This is a famous model for counting microstates of the black hole. But anyway, since now I simplify the problem to a two-dimensional metric, or let's say three-dimensional ADS3 metric with these symmetries. So I have this 1 over z squared factor, it has to be there always, or that I insert it here. And there's a temporal coordinate, there's one spatial coordinate, and then there's another spatial coordinate, which is this extra dimension.
The equation is written, right?
It yes.
Says d times d minus 1 term.
Yeah.
So and this is coming from some...
This I define, that defines ADS dd plus 1. So when I, d, okay. is, d is 2, it's just minus 1 over L squared.
So this answers the question, what is there, right, in terms of...
That is what is there.
It doesn't answer my question.
Why not?
Well, because you have to check that the equations of motion for all the fields are satisfied. Otherwise, we're not finding.
Yeah, so you're asking whether the term is correct or not. Because it comes from this other field.
There are more fields. I mean, the ADS5 case, there really is five form field strength that's turned on.
That's right.
It's normally constant and boring, but.
Yeah. So you're asking whether this last term is correct or not.
Yeah, you see, sometimes they are dilaton
also constant, so you mean.
But it comes from this other field.
No, it doesn't matter.
It matters. If, are you calculating it right or not?
I calculated the solution right.
It is a consistent truncation.
Yeah, I equation only.
So you're allowed to do this.
Good. So let me now present this solution. It's extremely simple here. And actually, the point is that whenever you want a solution with a boundary metric, that's the, we want something, we live in Minkowski space, we want the boundary metric to be Minkowski, or actually to be Milne, which is a patch of Minkowski. So now, and this is simply the solution, and actually it scales automatically. In the previous talk, we had this variable z over tau to 1/3, but now the variable is z to tau, simply, and I mean that is the solution here. So there is now a time-dependent solution. And if you put it to Einstein's equation, you get zero. By the way, we use a Mathematica code by Hedwig. It's a fantastic enjoyment. You speed in a metric and you press a button and you get everything. It's really fantastic. It's remarkable. So it's whenever you, it's so impressive. Somewhere, whenever you have a small error somewhere and you press a button, you get a huge expression, a crack. But when you have it correctly, zero. So you should never start calculating Christoffel symbols. It's unbelievable, really. But of course, it is just. So now, it seems that we have a horizon. We have. Yeah, actually, you should look at this. I mean, there are coordinates. There's time, space, and space. And there's one parameter, which is called v here. It looks like the horizon velocity. Actually, this parameter is related to the black hole mass by this formula. There is one constant, the black hole mass appears here. And I have to keep both of them. It gets very long if I don't try to eliminate one of them.
Sir, can you get this solution by the global identification of ADS3? Because that's how you get it easy.
Well, actually, I'm going backwards. So first we got this by solving this, and it looks like something which has a horizon. But actually, we know, of course, there's this VPZ. And so what one can do simply is to transform a wave. You basically know that you have to be able to transform it a wave. And now I'm working. I keep this spatial coordinate, this eta here. And so I'm working with this extra-dimensional and temporal coordinates. And so these coordinates I transform to these Kruskal coordinates, or then I can transform, there's another set of standard coordinates, T and R. And actually here I'm writing the appropriate formulas. So if I want to go from tau and z to Kruskal coordinates, this is the transformation. Oh, and then further, if I want to go to this T and R coordinates, this is the transformation. And this is a very nice exercise if you ever want to have even next to trivial exercise to your students. This is a very illuminating. You can work out things like this. And so this same metric, actually, not surprisingly, you can transform it to two different forms, which are just standard forms of this BTZ non-rotating black hole. So you had something which looked as if it had a horizon, but actually it is a static black hole. And that's why I'm asking about that in relation to the previous talk also. There are time-dependent phenomena, but of course you want gauge invariant things, which means reparametrization invariant. So now here you can transform away this time dependence. So now you can now start playing around with this. And, of course, what you want to plot is the standard, this we have seen many times here already, this Penrose diagram. For Schwarzschild, so if you do usual four-dimensional Schwarzschild metric, it has this structure here. So from infinity, you just get line. But for ADS, you have this vertical line. So you have something coming from infinity all the time. And so... This is now the standard metric, and it contains here there are two outsides of a black hole, and then there's a white hole, and then there's a black hole. So light goes here, and light comes out of there. So now what I can look at is, where is this coordinate singularity, my tentative horizon? And actually what it is, it sits here. You do the calculation, it sits here. So that's where the horizon is. And something what I could say, that, oh, fantastic, this is a moving horizon. Actually, it's nothing but a coordinate singularity. And so the one can say, in some sense, matter comes here out of a white hole. It's a very suggestive explanation for a heavy ion collision. You have a white hole somewhere, and matter plunges out of there. So actually, here I have it with numbers also. But it doesn't get it. The point really is that this coordinate singularity, which was a tentative horizon, moving horizon, it is a coordinate singularity in the white hole region. So So now I want to go to the boundary and calculate the energy momentum dash. So now boundary is R is infinity or this Z equal to zero. So that's where my physics is. It's now very simple 1+1 dimensional physics. That's where it is. And actually I will need the entropy there. And I'm just a little warning here that I am using, since here the area of, usually you have a sphere in Schwarzschild, now the area is sort of a range of this eta coordinate times its radius. The area here has a dimension of length. And so what is now the energy momentum tensor here? So now I am applying this rule. Now I am in two dimensions. So energy momentum, it has a dimension of temperature squared now. So I take the metric, I expand it to the second order. And then here is the expression for the energy momentum tensor. And of course, if I calculate it from the previous one, which has this spurious time dependence, I get something which looks like this very nicely. I get just this expanding sort of energy density, which goes like 1 over time squared. So I know that energy density has to be t squared. So of course, this suggests somehow that this combination should be t squared, modulo perhaps a constant. So energy, momentum, and pressure, they were automatic. That's the energy, momentum, tensor. But now one comes to the delicate point. What about entropy and temperature? How do I define them? And now that is now the delicate point in the previous talk. What is the, even if I have a moving horizon, some of these dynamical horizons? Here, of course, I know really what the entropy is, the static entropy. Actually, I know what the temperature of the PTZ black hole is, and it is, of course, completely static. It has to be 1 over this ADS radius. But actually, the outcome here is that if I want this to be T squared, and then one can argue here even better, because dimensionally, you have to simply replace this L by tau. That effectively gives you the result. ADS radius, instead of being L, is simply tau. So that's really starting from this BTZ black hole entropy. But then somehow one can here also try to evaluate this entropy from this standard form. So what is area here? And now I take this spurious area has a dimension of length. This eta coordinate here, it's or any particle physicist regards it as a rapidity, but of course, it's a relativist thinks of it as a something which is periodic, period 2 pi. But I will say it is just an interval. But anyway, if I assume that it is simply this spurious r times the length in rapidity, and if I do some multiplier, divide by tau, and say that volume is simply any particle physicist thinks that the longitudinal volume is tau times d eta, I get the temperature and entropy which just work out as there. So, this is not correct general relativity. I get expressions which work so that I get the thermodynamics which so I have energy density and pressure, which is a time dependent T squared. And likewise, entropy is proportional to temperature. But actually, there is one condition, just from uncertainty principles. Actually, the previous arguments, they demand that this parameter V should be small. But just from the uncertainty principle here, I mean, I expect that T times tau should be bigger than H bar. So that is actually also a very natural condition. So here, I mean, I'm now hearing that if
there's a piece of law in black hole, zeroth law of thermodynamics, that says that along a horizon, the temperature is constant when you define it as the surface gravity. Do you have any reason to think why that piece of lore would bring down here?
Simply because I get expressions which look like this here. I mean, it's extremely simple.
But you got them not surface gravity. You got them by, maybe I missed it.
I got it from this formula.
But that's for entropy. Now, temperature, how?
Oh, the temperature, how did I get it? I guess I basically... No, actually, here is one way of getting it for sure. You take the BTCL entropy, replace L ADS radius by tau, just for dimensional reasons. Then this works. But I can very well accept that this is very fishy from the point of view of general relativity, really.
What about the, if you just make a replacement which is dimensionally correct, you're not guaranteed to the first law of thermodynamics or something like that?
At least what I get then is somehow completely correct thermodynamics. Which also somehow, if I compare this with this ideal, this very simple system, 1+1-dimensional ideal gas, with that number of degrees of freedom, I get exactly the same value, not this celebrated 3/4, and I'm hearing that this is a perfectly standard result in string theory.
Is entropy conserved?
Oh, entropy is conserved here, certainly.
If I understand correctly, you keep calling this a fictitious horizon precisely because it's not really a horizon.
Exactly, I'm calling it fictitious.
So laws of thermodynamics, maxwell mechanics don't.
They don't apply, but this just sheds the light on the difficulty of defining the temperature here.
Blackwell thermodynamics doesn't work with Blackwell
universe. There was another.
Yeah,
but
it's just
a class.
Is this just a time dependence
slicing of BTC? I showed explicitly the coordinate transformation from BTC. So it is a time coordinate transformation of BTC. How many?
Couple
of minutes. But then I don't get at all the three dimensions, which is as good, since I don't have very much to say. But there's one curiosity here. This BTZ metric, I mean, it has a standard form when you make it rotate. This is just fine. So if I take this time-dependent metric with an off-diagonal term, there's this angular momentum of the BTZ metric. And somehow this is the metric, time-dependent metric corresponding to this rotating BTZ black hole. So now there are two parameters, there's J and there's mass. And now, of course, one can also from that calculate the energy momentum tensor. And now they are off diagonal terms. So you have to relate them to U mu. And what is so funny, you get certain energy density and pressure. But actually the flow vector, what here is, it just corresponds, probably this is just trivial, it corresponds to a boost of the flow in this one dimension. So when the gravity dual starts rotating, what you do is that you boost longitudinally, which is a completely trivial thing, the longitudinal, the one-dimensional flow. Somehow it sticks together and there are lots of nice formulas. I basically don't get how many minutes I could ask for. See, some of the hope would have been to give a solution of this type for the metric what Yannick was showing last time. So what we first try to have is look at a spherical expansion, which of course is another way of simplifying the structure. Let me just show one solution, which is actually quite interesting. So here is a metric which has a symmetry. There's a time. There's just dx3 squared, and then this Petermann factor here. So now this is our time-dependent solution, and this is sort of very long. If you remember, this was the static black hole solution.
But you don't have R.
It depends on one arbitrary function. And the problem with this solution is that actually we started looking for little bang, we ended up in big bang. So this was really found by looking at Hedrick's code and just solving the equations, and this solution came out, but then on the boundary it goes to Freeman, Robertson, Walker metric. So it's not a Minkowski metric we want in for this case. And it's really, it looks really complicated. It has this R prime. I mean, the general structure is that it's a polynomial in Z squared.
I'm sorry, where is this R in the metric?
I don't
see any R of T
in the metric. Oh, come on, it's here. Yeah. With all its derivatives. A is the function and this B is another function. And it looks so complicated, but when you put this to Einstein's equation, it gives zero. Believe it or not, so it solves this equation. And so actually this is... Well, what is so impressive here with this solution is that when you calculate the energy momentum tensor, somehow the general technique. Actually the question then is this also genuinely a solution, time-dependent solution, or is there a Birkhoff-like theorem which tells that one must be able to transform away that solution so that this becomes some static black hole?
In fact, it looks like that you should be able to do that, and that would be just the choice of the time coordinate. Yeah. Right. So if, as long as there is, so if radial, if your R function depends on the T, this would be a choice of U T prime.
I don't think that it looks like that, but it does not work. There are so many other constraints here.
But it is a solution.
It is a solution.
It is a solution to your
Einstein's equation. Absolutely, it is a solution. Yeah. But I will show one last point. Is we have discussed here calculation of the T union so many times here. Now, this is a more complicated case here. So one really now has to expand it to fourth order, and that the formula is much more complicated since here the boundary metric it's curl metric. And the formula is much more complicated. But when you feed that extremely complicated metric to this formula, you get a very beautiful energy momentum tensor, which very beautifully has a radiation part and a curvature part, and has also this trace anomaly and everything. And so again here, one has energy momentum, energy density, and pressure. And so one should define the temperature, and actually here also the definition of the temperature. If you just take the simplest alternative, T is 1 over tau, then you get a beautiful, a completely consistent scheme, and you don't get any singularities of the type Yannick also used to find out this power. But I think I will just stop here. It's
Can I ask again, in this case, what you did exactly to get your TFL?
In this case, I simply, if you look at what this expression is here, there's 1 over, actually this part here. If my R radius here goes like temperature, so this is 1 over T to the fourth, and this is the derivative. It is 1 over t to the 4th. So very beautifully, energy density is 1 over constant times t to the 4th. It's very almost trivial.
I have to, because I've been confused myself. How do you get these temperatures similar back?
Yeah. Just by hand, basically.
Three-dimensional gravity doesn't actually have optically involved
thing. It doesn't have gravitons, yeah. That's why it has no curvature singularities.
So is that somehow reflected in...
It's reflected, in fact it is simpler. That's what one can handle it then.
It's a very naive question. I probably should have asked it during the previous talk. How do you think about the state in field theory? that you're describing with this time-dependent logic. That is it whatever state it is, whatever non-equilibrium density operator it is, to produce the expectation value for energy momentum tensor of that particular?
That was kind of my last question in my conclusion. So it is a question for me also. What is one, how this ADS CFT duality really applies to phenomena which start at some point? Since usually you get correlators between in and out states, usual field theory correlators. Now you have something which starts at some point. You have this initial condition problem.
Well, even before the initial, because see, you have expectation value of T mu that in field theory in some state.
Yeah.
So what is that state as expressed in terms of field theory operators?
The state in which T mu nu has this expression.
Well, always when you do thermal field theory, I mean, your state is just rho hat is equal to e to the minus beta h.
That's a very special state. But no other state can be written this way.
So, you have time to spend to see a much longer list of other expectation values.
Well,
the totality of that information.
Okay. So you wrote that you could use the expectation of the standard and you needed an expansion to post order.
Yes.
But do you have an do you have a full solution in terms of so G? But
that is everything. That is the full solution.
So the G mu is
here.
And it truncates Z.
This is the truncation of the series. But its exact solution here is known. Exact solution is known, and this is just the expansion of it.
So, but do you know the full thoughts?
Of course. The exact solution
is.
Yes.
Okay.
The only authentic way of finding temperature would be to look at the Euclidean continuation of this and see whether it's periodic or not, and I guess
that would
not work here.
It's not supposed to be.
It's locally thermal.
So the definition of temperature itself is clear.
Okay, we'll take care once again.